The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff, and we're delighted to have you with us today. And today we're going to talk about cancer and not cancer. And it's really important sometimes to know the difference. So first of all, let me introduce my co-host, Robin Martinez, who's with us from Colorado. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Joyce. We're finally getting ready for a storm here, which is probably our first big one of the season.
Yes, March is supposed to go out like a lamb, but this year it's going out like a lion. So anyway, we'll all brace ourselves. And Debbie, your adventure started with a snowstorm too. This is Debbie, who's going to share her story with us. Good morning, Debbie.
Hi, it's nice to be with you guys.
Thank you so much. So you got diagnosed as having kidney cancer, as I recall, and then wound up doing some research that led you in a somewhat different direction. You want to help us understand how this transpired?
Yes, it's kind of an unusual story in that I had noticed that there were a number of kidney problems in my mother's family. My grandmother died of kidney failure when I was a young girl. Then my mother was diagnosed at around age 71 with kidney cancer. It was found incidentally. She went for an X-ray because of hip pain. They found a tumor on her kidney. Her kidney was removed and she had no further treatment. But of course, at the time, this was back in the 1970s, they didn't say to us, oh, you know, this was maybe a very slow-growing cancer. I just knew that she had kidney cancer. They took out her kidney, and that seemed to be it. But then a few years ago, one of my mother's sisters, she's the oldest of five girls, was diagnosed with stage 4 kidney cancer. But her doctor didn't think that she had cancer, so he did a biopsy on her kidney and found out that she had a type of tumor called an oncocytoma. I didn't really pay too much attention to that, but then my mother's youngest sister called me to tell me that she had also been diagnosed with kidney cancer. And it turned out, after they removed her kidney, that she had a very, very large oncocytoma. And I thought that that was just really weird that so many people in my mother's family had these kidney tumors. So I reached out to my brother-in-law, who is a radiation oncologist at Mass General, and he told me that I really should talk to the people at the National Institutes of Health because they really were the experts in the genetic basis of kidney cancer. So I did reach out to them, spoke with their
genetic. Let me back up for 1 second and make sure everybody is with us. When you say she was diagnosed with stage 4 kidney cancer, stage 4 usually means it has already metastasized.
Correct.
Had they seen anything they thought was a met, or were they going simply on the size of the tumor?
I think it was the size of the tumor, and maybe because she had multiple tumors in her kidney, maybe they thought that, the one tumor had metastasized, I don't know, into, like, you know, other tumors in her kidney. I don't know, because they actually got this from the other aunt, so it's a little bit of a telephone situation here.
Yeah, sometimes if they see tumors on both sides, they make the assumption that it has already moved from kidney 1 to kidney 2. Robin, you want to add anything to this? We're all conjecturing, it's worthwhile, and we'll tell you why.
I think we should probably talk about what an oncocytoma is before we go too much farther.
Okay.
Good point. You want to go?
Well, it turns out that oncocytomas are relatively rare, and maybe they're rare because they're not normally found because unless you had some problem with your kidney, as my one aunt did, you really wouldn't have gone in for any type of scan that would have shown it. So there could be a lot of people who have these that just don't know about it. But in our family's case, they were found, and they're benign tumors of the kidney. They can grow very large, and when they do, they can cause problems. So they're not totally you know, in quotes, benign. In my case, they weren't causing any problems at all. It was because of this family history. The genetics counselor at the NIH recommended I mention to my family doctor that I had this history. And when I did, she sent me for an ultrasound of my kidney. And ironically, the ultrasound only found a cyst on my right kidney. And my doctor's reaction was, well, normally I would just let this go and maybe check it again in a year. But because of your family history, I think we should send you for a CAT scan. And when I had the CAT scan, I have to tell you, I still remember, as I'm sure anybody who gets a diagnosis of cancer remembers that day they heard the news. I was actually sitting in the nail salon, noticed a phone number that I thought was close to my doctor's phone number, but not quite. And when I got the message and heard, you need to call me back immediately, and if I'm not in the office, here's my cell phone number, I knew something was up. And what they had found on the CAT scan was 3 tumors in my left kidney. Now, the ultrasound had only found a cyst in my right kidney, nothing else. So when I spoke to my family doctor, it was very obvious she was very, very concerned and told me I needed to see a doctor immediately. And when I asked her if they thought maybe I had cancer, she seemed to indicate that there was pretty much no doubt that I did have cancer of the kidney.
A couple things that I want to point out, and I think Robin probably has other things she wants to say as well. In that an oncocytoma, you mentioned, is usually benign. Benign,
correct,
in the cancer world means it doesn't move to other places. It doesn't metastasize. And metastasis is usually the most dangerous part of cancer. When they're little, before they spread other places, they're much more controllable. And usually taking them out with surgically is most of the problem. But once they've moved to other places, then they're not benign. But in normal usage, the word benign means, you know, that had a benign countenance. It means friendly. So
right.
They may be benign in the cancer sense of the world, but they're still not friendly. Okay.
Correct.
So, they're not.
And I think that's indicative by one of my aunts where the oncocytoma grew so large, it actually, the reason she went to the hospital was she thought she had a severe bladder infection. She had blood in her urine, pain, and it was because the oncocytoma had grown so large, it actually destroyed the function of that particular kidney. So she did have to have that kidney removed.
Right. And one of the reasons I put up that picture, there's a picture of a kidney in cross-section that's going on the slideshow behind as we speak. And one of the reasons I put that picture up there is so you can see all those little tubules. The red things are arteries. The blue things are veins. And the white things are the little tubules that carry the urine to the bladder. So there's all these little bitty tubules in the kidney. And one of the things, even if you have a, quote, benign, unquote, tumor, and it's not going to metastasize or cause you other cancer problems, it can still cause havoc by simply sitting on those little tubules and interfering with the delivery of blood and urine.
Exactly. Now, in my case, I had absolutely no symptoms whatsoever. Hence my being so shocked when my doctor called with the diagnosis.
Now, that's an interesting point, because even when cancer, kidney cancer is metastatic, even when it's very far advanced, and even when it's the absolute worst type, you might have no symptoms.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so scary about it. And then if I was scared enough after talking to my family doctor, I went to the doctor she recommended I see locally. And the first thing that doctor told me was that I was the worst case that he had ever seen. That's not something you really want to hear from a doctor you're thinking is going to treat you. And then proceeded to tell me that while he would try to do the surgery laparoscopically and robotically, and to do a partial nephrectomy. He told me that I better be, you know, braced, that it was such a difficult surgery that I would more than likely lose my left kidney. And then he told me that I also had a tumor on my right kidney. He told me in my case, the tumors would probably come back, so that if I, he said eventually we'd have to do surgery on my right kidney, and more than likely I would lose my right kidney as well, so that I was looking at a future of being on dialysis, and that at some point maybe I could hope for a kidney transplant. So I have to tell you, I went in thinking I was going to lose my kidney, because that's what I had seen with my mom and my aunt. And so to walk out of that appointment hearing that I was such a horrible case, especially when I felt so terrific, was really just unbelievable to me. And I don't know how other people feel, but I'm a librarian. I'm used to doing research. But at that point, I just felt almost, the word helpless is what comes to mind. But then all of a sudden I remembered, like, oh my gosh, I spoke to the people at the NIH. I really should reach out to them. And it was almost a year, almost to the day, a year later, that I called the genetics counselor back to say, you know, guess what? I have a diagnosis now. I actually do have a tumor. And they made an appointment for me very, very quickly, had me come down. They assured me I was not, by any stretch of the imagination, the worst case that they had ever seen. They told me that they weren't prepared to say that I had cancer. But at that point, at that appointment, I really thought that they were saying that to me just to maybe calm me down. And maybe because I felt that they were being very, very conservative, and until they actually, you know, had the pathology report, even if they were 99.999% positive it was cancer, they wouldn't say it. So I really had that thought in the back of my mind, as well as I was dealing with the original doctor I saw, called me back a few days later and left a message and said he had thought about the diagnosis he gave me and wanted to talk to me because he had thought about it more and had some different ideas. And I thought when I was calling him back that he was going to say, oh, I think you might have what your aunts have. And instead he told me that what he thought I had was lymphoma and not renal cancer. And if that was good news in his mind, that was not good news in my mind.
No, I agree with you. Go ahead, Robin.
I was just agreeing also. Trading one kind of cancer for another kind of cancer isn't really that good. Although, of course, at the time, lymphoma was considered a more treatable cancer than renal cell.
Yeah, so maybe that's why he thought that was, you know, a better diagnosis. To me, you know, I had seen my mother lose her kidney, and that was it. She never had any further problems. So I'm thinking, well, I may still lose my kidney, and now I'm going to be dealing with chemotherapy and this other type of cancer. So it really, I mean, I was just a nervous wreck. And I have to say, when I got to the NIH, I didn't even say that to them because I knew I was accepted into a study because I had renal cancer, familial renal cancer. And I was afraid if I said to them, oh, you know, this other doctor thought I had lymphoma, the chance I have lymphoma, that they might say, oh, yeah, you might have lymphoma. Oh, you're no longer part of the study. So, I mean, those were just some of the things that went through my mind. And I think it's, you know, my journey is just, you know, to me, it's just like so incredible to go from those dark places thinking like I can't even share my concern about possibly having this other cancer because I might not fit into a study. And I'm thinking this might be the best place for me to be. So if I say this, I'm going to get knocked out of being in this best place, to then eventually finding out that I had these five tumors, they were removed. I basically have my entire kidney, maybe a tiny part of it is lost, and I didn't have cancer. So, you know, in a few months, I really went on this incredible, you know, this incredible, incredible journey from just feeling like, not that there wasn't any hope. I certainly knew that there was lots of hope, but just being so devastated by the diagnosis and then finding out that I didn't indeed have cancer and the tumors that I had were treated. And I did have the surgery at the National Institutes of Health. And I was very, very fortunate because immediately after the surgery, the NIH has a standard protocol that they put you in ICU. When I woke up, I remember thinking my doctor had said I would feel some pain. I remember lying there thinking, okay, when does the pain happen? I never really had any pain. It felt more like a muscle pull if I moved a certain way, and that went away after a couple of days. And I recovered so quickly. So I really had a very, I don't want to say an easy go of it. I mean, certainly the surgery was pretty grueling. I was in the OR, I think, for 6.5 hours. But I really came through everything, you know, from feeling like I might wind up on dialysis and need a kidney transplant to going through the surgery. And 2 days after surgery, I walked a mile and went from there.
Wow, fantastic. So let's back up again a little bit. So anyway, you were told you had kidney cancer. And in all fairness to the doctor, when they do one of these scans, they see that you've got some sort of white blobs on your kidney. And the question then is, what is this white blob? And they tend to work from their experience. And your average doctor in the field does not have enormous experience with kidney cancer. It's, what, the eighth most prevalent cancer in the United States. So it is only in eighth position. And your ordinary urologist at most local hospitals will see a couple of these every year, but not a lot of them. So if you have kidney cancer, and this is really true for everybody, don't panic. Do take action. And you did very well with that. As you say, even as a person who normally does research, you felt like, I'm in territory I don't know anything about, and I feel at danger, and my doctor says I need to do X, Y, and Z, so I guess I need to do X, Y, and Z. But as you learned, it really does pay to ask for a second opinion, not from another guy in the same practice.
Correct.
But get a second opinion from an expert center, of which there are, what, two handfuls, in Robin, would you say, in the United States?
Approximately. We were just discussing this on Smart Patients, and someone said they thought there were probably 25 doctors who qualify as super specialists in kidney cancer.
Wow.
And then there are a larger number of doctors who deal with it pretty constantly, and then most doctors, just as you said, see one or two cases a year and really don't have any particular expertise in dealing with this kind of cancer and the offshoots of it, like oncocytoma. So ending up at NIH at the National Cancer Institute was fantastically good luck.
Yeah, and there's part of me that feels it was good luck. There were a couple of detours along the way that kind of helped me get there. I did see a doctor at the Rutgers Cancer Institute here in New Jersey, and that doctor was recommended to me by a colleague at work, and he actually trained the doctor I wound up having at the NIH. That was so, I keep thinking how fortuitous that was, and he was the one that really like made the connection for me between with that particular doctor. And really helped pave the way and really helped comfort me in going to that particular doctor. But I think it's so true that you just have to keep persevering and ask people. I talk a lot, and I just kept t- telling people I felt so unsettled, and it was through talking that I found the connection to Rutgers Cancer Institute. Somebody else was referring me to another doctor at Sloan. I wound up never going there, but that would have been another option. So I think sometimes you do tend to cocoon a little bit, and maybe you don't want to talk about an illness, but by talking, you never know the connections that you make with people. And sometimes by talking to them, they know somebody, or they know somebody who knows somebody. And those connections are really, really powerful. And I think that goes to the name of this talk, The Powerful Patient, because you really do have a lot more power than you think that you do.
If you do not draw on the power of other people, even though you don't know what their expertise might be, even though they don't know what their expertise might be, you will find these they seem like coincidences, they seem like just luck, but often you will end up in the hands of someone who really is a world-class expert just because you asked.
Right.
That's right. And there are two things in particular that I think were particularly good about going to an expert center. One is that you got an opportunity to have a partial nephrectomy rather than a total nephrectomy. So this nephrectomy is the removal of the kidney. When they do a partial, it means that they take out the bad parts and leave all the good parts. And it's the nephrons. There's a whole collection of little bitty devices inside your kidney that make the pee and clean all the bad stuff out of your bloodstream. And so leaving as much of that working kidney as possible is important to your long-term health. So you need to really talk to your doctor about, do we really, really need to take out the whole kidney, or can we just take out the bad stuff and leave me with as much working kidney as possible? And that's important for everybody to have that discussion with their doctor. I can't tell you how it's going to turn out, but it's an important discussion. So
yeah, and
for your own long-term health, have that talk. Go ahead.
And when I had spoken to that first doctor, I mean, although he had said that he was going to try, it really seemed to me like he didn't think it was really going to be possible to save my kidney. And at that time, they thought I had 3 tumors. In the end, they found an additional 2. They were pretty small, so I had 5 tumors removed. But when I did meet with the doctor, I eventually had to do the surgery at the NIH, I asked, how much of my kidney was I going to lose? And he said, after thinking for a while, he said, I think maybe you're going to lose 5%. And I remember sitting there thinking, like, I couldn't have possibly heard that right, because I was looking at possibly losing my kidney. So I very quickly thought to myself, oh my gosh, I can't say, oh, I'm losing 5% only, because he's going to think I'm absolutely stupid. I said, it has to be transposed. So I looked at him and said, oh, okay, so I'll lose about 95% of my kidney. And I remember the look on his face was absolutely horrified. He's like, no, no, you're keeping 95% of your kidney. You're only losing 5%. And later when I saw him, I said to him, oh my gosh, when I said that, you must have like looked at me and thought, oh my God, I know Americans are bad at math, but like this one takes the cake. And he assured me he did not think that. I'm sure he did. But I just, it was so unbelievable to me. And when I did go back to him and ask about the surgery, I asked how much of my kidney I actually did wind up losing. And that's when he told me that he tried so hard to not get any of my kidney tissue. And he thought he told me I didn't lose any, but he said maybe 1%. So, I mean, like,
that's fabulous.
I think about that I possibly could have lost my kidney, and instead maybe I've lost about 1%. And I know people
right.
do live, you know, with one kidney, but if you don't have to, I am thrilled that I have as much of my kidney left as I do.
Right, and it really is important. And I just want to underscore for everybody, look at the difference in the experience of those physicians. The first doctor said, oh, this is the worst case I've ever seen. 3 tumors he thought was his worst case.
Right.
And as you say, then you wound up having 5 tumors. I know that physician at NIH, and I know that he has removed 30 or more tumors from each kidney. So, I mean, it's phenomenal what you can do if you have the right technique, the right technology, and the right experience level. So, yes, do pursue the conversation about partial nephrectomy. And the other thing, the other line I wanted to pursue is that NIH in particular has a lot of experience with hereditary kidney
yes.
conditions. And that's where you really got into the right place. By talking with them about the familial connections. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Yes, it turns out that there is a tendency in some families to develop oncocytomas. They call it familial renal oncocytomas. The NIH, I think, has said they only know of fewer than 20 families in the world that have this. They haven't found any like linkage to a particular ethnic extraction. My family is German. I asked if they found it mostly like in people of German heritage. They said no. They found it, you know, across the board. I then said in our family, it's only females that are affected. They said actually they found it in more males than in females. Then I noticed in our family, 2 of my aunts have children, 2 don't. The 2 that do not have children do not have oncocytomas. So everyone in my family who has had oncocytomas has had children. So I thought maybe there was some kind of hormonal connection, but they said no, that they haven't found that. So they are researching it, but right now they haven't found what causes it. So I do think I've told my children that while they may have this genetic condition, at least be thankful it's a relatively benign one. But what I wanted my children to know and be aware of, I know that God forbid they are ever in an accident and they have a CAT scan and yep. they see something on their kidneys, they're going to be told they have kidney cancer. So I've told both mm-hmm. of them that if that ever happens, they've got to get to the NIH because it's more than likely that they do not have kidney cancer, they have oncocytomas. And one thing really quickly that I just want to say, up until now, there's really been no definitive way of distinguishing an oncocytoma from a renal cancer without doing surgery. Some places, I know my one aunt has had biopsies, and she thought it was terrible that I went ahead and had surgery before having biopsies done. But I know there's a lot of controversy about kidney biopsies. They say that they're really there are a lot of false negatives. So I think up until now, the course of treatment has been when the oncocytoma gets or the tumor gets large enough, they just remove it. But now Johns Hopkins is actually working on a test that might be able to determine an oncocytoma from other types of tumors through a CAT scan. So I'm really excited yeah. about that because if you don't have to have surgery, let's face it, that's a good thing. But they're pretty
sure.
far along in their research, and it looks like it's pretty effective. But I don't think that it's widely known yet.
Right. And I think that, number one, I want to give you some kudos for pursuing your own family investigations, because this is important. If you can determine that there's a familial connection, then that becomes very important information as you discovered. And each of us can, you know, talk with that aunt with the longest Christmas card list or you know, who probably knows all the skinny about all the family members. But the other thing to point out, particularly about oncocytoma, is that it's estimated that at least 75% of oncocytomas are undiagnosed. And that is probably a low estimate because, for the most part, these things are not particularly troublesome. Even if it interferes a little bit with the flow of those vessels that we were talking about, it doesn't really become an issue until it's severe or until the thing is so large that you can feel it on the outside or it's bumping into something more important. So most oncocytomas would probably not come to our attention, and you probably would never complain about it. But once you do, then you have to be very careful not to lose more kidney than necessary over what is, in fact, a relatively benign issue and certainly not a cancer issue.
Correct. And, you know, I'm just very, very happy that, you know, fortuitously I wound up at the NIH. But again, it was through making my, you know, using my contacts. And I'm fortunate that my brother-in-law, who's now at Mass General, did practice for a time at the NIH. He actually knows Marston Linehan. So he had that connection and was able to tell me about him. I'm not sure if I would have gotten connected to the NIH if it hadn't been for my brother-in-law. But again, it's, you know, knowing what connections you have and reaching out to them and then using that knowledge to get what's the right care for you.
Great.
It's an amazing story. And it's just so instructive for people that what you think is going on, what the doctor thinks is going on, may not be what's going on. And you really have to find the best people available to help you through these experiences.
Exactly.
Right.
And you have to find somebody, I think, a doctor that you feel you can talk to and trust, so that you can share your concerns.
Patients' concerns are often so different than what the doctor thinks the patient understands. So if the patient isn't speaking up, it can be very easy to get totally jumbled in not understanding what's going on.
Right.
Exactly.
The other thing we talked about was that when you see it on the scan, it's basically just a little bright spot on the middle of your kidney. So what in the heck is this thing? Now, in the old days, they would have done what they called exploratory surgery, which is not fun. So let's not do that. These days, we have different imaging techniques. And we also have, you mentioned, a biopsy. And a biopsy is that they go ahead and put a needle in the tumor, you know, through your skin, under your skin. They send a little needle down into the tumor, and they take a piece of it and extract that and look at it under the microscope. And the reason that that is questioned is that kidney tumors in particular are what they call heterogeneous. Not all the cells in the tumor are the same. So some of the cells are fat, some of the cells are different kinds of things. And depending where you stick the needle, you may pull out different kinds of cells. So it may come out and say, oh, it's just a fatty tumor because all they picked up was fat. Or they could have different answers. And that's why it's considered not a definitive test. It's helpful. It often provides useful information. And so for some kinds of tumors, it's very important. But for other kinds of tumors, it may or may not be beneficial. So you mentioned, what's the name of this test that you said is coming out, that with a different kind of a CAT scan, they might be able to get more information before they do surgery?
It's called Cestamibi. And from what I understand, oncocytomas have lots of mitochondria. And the mitochondria, when they inject Cestamibi into you, it's a radioactive substance. The mitochondria, like, really
soak it up.
And when they do that, it makes the tumor really light up on the CAT scan. So that's my understanding of it, as a real layperson's understanding of it. But it seems to be, from their initial trials, from what I've read, it seems to be very, very effective in distinguishing oncocytomas from other types of tumors. So I'm really, really hopeful. I mean, it didn't benefit me. I actually found out about it after the fact. And I just want to mention, I think once I had my surgery and I was back, you know, on the mend, that's when my librarian mode went in, I think, because I was no longer scared. And I actually used social media to find information and didn't think I was going to find anything, but I did a search on Twitter for oncocytomas and found a lot of medical people who were discussing it. And I had a lot of trouble understanding it. But then I went on Facebook and said, oh, let me do a search on Facebook for oncocytomas, never expecting to find anything. And lo and behold, when I did that, I got to the Facebook page of Johns Hopkins, not their urology department, but their radiology department, that happened to talk about this new test that one of their urology residents had developed. So I read about it. It had the name of the resident. Actually, at that point, I thought he was an attending doctor. So I looked further into it. I found his email. I emailed him on a Sunday afternoon, and within 5 minutes of me sending out that email, he was on the phone calling me. So that was pretty amazing, and I got a lot of information from him. I was really, really impressed, and I'm just amazed that he took the time. I mean, this is not like oncocytomas aren't that common, so I really appreciated the fact that he recognized that there were people like me who had surgery, who really maybe didn't need to have surgery, and what could they do about that? So I'm forever grateful to him, even though it didn't personally benefit me.
Great. And it's important for more people to sign up for these procedures that are considered experimental. It's not going to hurt you. It may or may not help you. But you could be providing extremely important information that would help to validate the test or prove that it doesn't work, do the job. But if it does do the job, then that avoids a lot of unnecessary surgery. That's really true. Thank you so
exactly.
much for sharing this. Robin, any parting thoughts?
One thing that can happen, and I don't think it probably happens with the kind of familial oncocytoma, but oncocytoma can turn into chromophobe renal cell carcinoma. So just because you have this type of tumor that is regarded as relatively harmless doesn't mean that you can breathe a sigh of relief and never look at it again. You do have to stay on top of it.
Well, and that's, you know, I do have the one on my other kidney. There, the NIH is pretty sure that it's an oncocytoma, but I do go back yearly for checkups just to make sure.
Right. Now, yeah, and when you're going to a place like NCI where they know what they're dealing with a little bit better than most places, they will stay on top of the situation, whereas doctors who have never seen oncocytoma before might read superficially about oncocytoma and say, okay, you're fine. You can go live your life and you never have to come back unless you have some kind of problem.
Right.
And
you know what? I also forgot to mention when my aunt was first, when she first told me that she had an oncocytoma, they did test her for another genetic problem called Bert-Hogg-Dubé syndrome. And it sounded like very much like that might be what's going on in our family. And they tested both my aunt, she's out in California, and myself, and we don't have Bert-Hogg-Dubé. But there are several other genetic problems.
I'll be gritty in one minute.
That are related to oncocytomas. So I think sometimes in VHL, I'm not entirely sure if that one people get oncocytomas, but definitely with Bert-Hogg-Dubé.
Right.
That's right.
And they're finding more and more genetic syndromes of kidney cancer practically daily at MCI. So just because you're not in a known syndrome doesn't mean it's not genetic.
Correct.
So this has been really wonderful. We're going to need to wind this up, but I just wanted to add one more little plug for the National Institutes of Health. A lot of people don't even know what it is, and this is a fabulous resource that is federally funded, And the funding for the NCI is actually one of the things on the chopping block in Congress right now. So they've been studying for 30 years how to cure kidney cancer. That was what they set out to do. And what they've discovered is that kidney cancer is not one disease. It's many diseases. It is something that happens to people just for no good reason during their lifetime. It may be caused by certain chemicals, pollutions. Certainly smoking increases your odds of having cancer, kidney cancer, and that there are all these familial conditions that have been extremely instructive in helping us understand how kidney cancers develop and how we might be able to target a drug to make a difference. There are 11 new drugs on the market based on the research has come out of the National Cancer Institute just for kidney cancer. This is just one of their many, many projects. They prototype things for the nation and help to instruct the field to make all of our doctors smarter and better. So if you have a chance to remind your people in Congress how important the NCI is to you, that would be a really wonderful thing to do.
And I've already done that, Joyce. My congressman happens to be the head of the Appropriations Committee for Congress. So, and he actually knew that I was at the NIH. He called my husband four times while I was there to make sure I was doing okay. So let me tell you, we have left messages. I've tweeted to him. My husband has called him and will be speaking to him. So hopefully we can help get that funding restored because it's critically important, not just, as you said, for this type of cancer research, but all types of scientific research that are funded through grants from the NIH. So, again, my parting thought would be look at your family and start thinking about, like, if there are certain things that you see, health conditions that come up time and time again in your family, because there could be a genetic connection. And if there is, or even if there isn't, it might be something that you might want to discuss with your doctor and say, hey, you know, I noticed this in my family. Everyone in my family seems to get, like I noticed with kidneys in our family. And when I first mentioned it to my mother's doctor, just based on her and then her mother, he was emphatic. My grandmother died of kidney failure. He said that there's absolutely zero connection. Well, with the knowledge we have today, there might not be any connection, but we really don't know what caused my grandmother's kidney failure. It was back in the 1960s. They didn't have the same kind of tests. My grandmother was extremely obese. She was very, very poor. She really didn't get a lot of attention. And at the age of 53, she was considered so old that her life wasn't really worth anything. So, persist.
So, I think we're way beyond that. We are going to, the show's going to end in about 60 seconds. So let me just thank you again, Debbie, for sharing this. And
you're very welcome.
Lending your expertise as always. We really appreciate that. And thanks to everybody who's stuck with us and listened. I hope that you've taken away many important lessons today from this wonderful story. And please be with us again. We will come back with another show for you next week. And meanwhile, be well and be a powerful patient. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to GEICO than saving you money, GEICO also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the GEICO app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.